How's it going? This is Jamie from Projecting the Jump, one half of the team. The people call me Flying J. If you're listening to this, it may be the day of the NBA Draft 2024, June 26. What you're about to listen to was recorded on April 4th, 2024, the weekend of the Final Four. The audio actually never made it out. We have the full conversation with Caden Milleren on YouTube, but this portion of the podcast didn't make it out, and it's a good one. It's jam-packed with prospect profiles. We go heavy and hard on Kentucky prospects Rob Dillingham and Reed Sheppard, as well as Justin Edwards. Then we spend some time on the Colorado guys, Cody Williams, Tristan Da Silva, and KJ Simpson. And we get into some other fun talk on other prospects as well. So check this out. It was a great conversation, and I wanted to make sure we got it out as it is the season. So enjoy the pod and enjoy the NBA draft, y'all.
I grind for the love of the game, watching March Madness through a fantasy lens. We grind for the love of the game, scouting next year's rookie class is done best with a friend. Welcome back to PTJ, everybody. It is Thursday night, April 4th, right before the Final Four kicks off on Saturday. I hope that your fantasy playoffs are in the books. If not, I hope you're managing your drinking this week. One benefit to ending your playoffs at the end of week 21 or being eliminated early or a combo of both is it frees one up to focus on the NCAA tournament. And if you're anything like your old boy Flying J, that means you're already thinking about next year's rookie class. The class is down compared to last year, but there's still plenty of talent. So today on the pod, we're going to focus on college basketball prospects in particular. Speaking of friends, unfortunately, Natron Clean could not join us today. He is on a work trip in the fine state of Arizona, but I'm happy to report that he was recently able to take his daughters to see UConn. Natron Clean is originally from Connecticut, to the women's Sweet 16 in Portland. So he's been getting very much into the March Madness spirit. Natron also attended the Pac-12 men's tournament in Vegas with some of the boys from the League of Record, where shockingly, Oregon was victorious. It's a shame to know that he felt so much joy. Okay, I miss him, but I digress. Today, for the second year in a row, we will turn to one of the biggest college basketball junkies I, or hopefully anyone, has ever met. And that person is, of course, the brilliant and charismatic Caden Milleren. Hello, Caden. Welcome to Projecting the Jump.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad to be back. Had fun last year.
Dude, 100%. So how we're going to kind of structure this is we're going to get into some teams in particular that have prospects that, you know, we want to talk about. We're going to talk about how they are ranked right now, kind of what we think about them, and I'll put a little fantasy spin on it as we go through. So this information is beneficial to the fantasy player. We're always trying to collect information, but we definitely want to approach it from more of like a couch scout lens where we're just talking about the players in general. So just for the listener, a little heads up on that. So we are going to start with some University of Kentucky players here now. This is a team that it's funny because their last title was in 2012. And you would think the way that their fan base talks that they hadn't won one since 1972. But that's what happens when you set expectations so high. And to be fair, these losses have been historic. And this last one in particular was painful. So shout out to the UK Bay. And I'm sorry for what you went through that day. But traditionally, Caden, you know, the University of Kentucky's got themselves into a bit of a conundrum because, as we know, they, with John Calipari at the helm, masters of recruiting. They are great at recruiting players on paper. They're always stacked. And then when we try to figure out, okay, how are they going to translate to the next level? I think sometimes their players have trouble showing, and you and I talked about this, they have trouble showing their entire skill set while they're at Kentucky. There are endless examples. Tyler Hero, Devin Booker, Tyrese Maxey, to a lesser extent, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. These guys were all still developing into the players that they became. And so when we're looking at the players we're going to talk about today, I want to consider that A, Kentucky has an incredible track record, and so there's always meat left on the bones. But at the same time, that can also influence what we think of these prospects because they hit so often. You know, how do you kind of wrestle with that balance? How do you balance that those factors?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I think, obviously, you look at, you pulled up a list right now of all the Kentucky players in the league. It's pretty astonishing. And it seems like a pretty safe bet to go with a Kentucky guard, which is perhaps why Dillingham and Reed Shepherd have been, because of how well they've played in college basketball, but they've also been, you know, up at the top of a lot of mock drafts, despite some size limitations. But yeah, it's an interesting thing because you have examples of players who went to Kentucky and the teams are loaded and they take on a different role than they've ever had before. And sometimes it's difficult to find what exactly your niche with that often the ecosystem is going to be because you're being transplanted into a situation that's so new. I mean, if you're one of these guys who's a, you know, a top 10 player in high school, in all likelihood, you've constantly been the best player on your own team. And now you're kind of being confronted with a lot of peer talent. And some players are able to figure that out sooner than others. Some players really struggle with it. Mm-hmm. So it's hard sometimes to project where some of these Kentucky players are going to end up.
Yeah, I think that's really fair. That's that makes a ton of sense. Let's go ahead and get into the prospects first. It's funny because before I even knew the rankings and where they were at, just I watch a lot of Kentucky games. And Rob Dillingham jumped off the page to me as the player that just seemed to have – that it factor as far as the ceiling potential going to the next level. So the Ringer has their NBA draft guide, the first edition out. And so Kevin O'Connor, he has Dillingham seventh. And then shout out to Hoop Intellect. And Caden, I want you to give a little plug because you turned me on to them. And I've been watching some of their videos in preparation of this podcast. They have Dillingham at number six. So, you know, they're in agreement there. So Hoop Intellect, just a little bit. Why is that something you've been using? It seems like a pretty smart guys over there. But what can you say about Hoop Intellect?
Yeah, well, so I had been looking for some maybe non-mainstream sources because I find oftentimes that a lot of those end up becoming rehashings of each other's rankings. I also find a lot of frustration in them sometimes when they're putting together mock drafts and some of the draft selections just don't make any sense. The number of times I've seen, you know, somebody through some mainstream publication having the Blazers taking another 6'3 guard at like the five spot this year, it's kind of frustrating. And I think that these guys are oftentimes people who cover multiple sports. And so I don't know how much of an expert as a NBA scout evaluator they really are. I found Hoop Intellect on YouTube and just found that he formulates a lot of his own opinions. He's not afraid to diverge from consensus, but he'll also explain really sort of intelligently why he does make those divergences. And he'll make his own concessions and he'll concede to, you know, some when he's wrong. But he seems like just a guy who's really plugged in as a scout, who really watches a ton of film, gives really, really simple breakdowns of players' games and comparisons and things like that. And he's not concerned at this point of the year with putting together a mock draft.
Yes,
he has a big board. He's doing that over and over and over again. And so it feels a lot less like, I don't know, thirsty for attention or anything like that. I think he's just really plugged in and he knows what he's doing and he enjoys doing it.
Really well said. It felt very anti-clickbait to me.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, I really want us to focus today on these players as prospects. We're not going to talk a lot about theoretical landing spots. I don't think that's too useful here. We said at the beginning of April, I want to look at these are players that we've seen a lot of them in the tournament or coming out of their conference tournaments. And so we're focused on them as prospects today. So back to Rob Dillingham. He is a 6'1", 175-pound guard. The Ringer has him comped to shades of Lou Williams. I really liked that one. Bones Highland as an electric bucket gator who is starting to develop as a playmaker. he really showed, he reminded me a little bit of Tyrese Maxey when I watched him as college players, in that at times he could seem a bit erratic with the ball, but he just had so much talent and he's hunting for his opportunities. And so when it really came together, for instance, he had a 35-point game against Tennessee, who made a deep tournament run. You saw these incredible flashes. What do you think of Dillingham overall as a prospect as he gets ready for the NBA draft?
I really enjoy watching Rob Dillingham. Like you said, he kind of pops off the page. He's really quick. He's a guy who on any given night, I think, can give you a bunch of buckets. He doesn't totally play above the rim, but he's capable of it. And he's a surprisingly good athlete when he, I think, you know, once he's in the NBA, and he'll probably be somewhat less of a focal point offensively. The court's wider, more people around him to spread the floor and things like that. I think he's going to be a very good offensive player in the league. Obviously, he's limited with size. 6'1 is probably not your favorite size for your lead guard to be, but I think he can make up for that with speed and just general shot-making ability. I think he could be a really interesting pick-and-roll partner, especially with where it's looking like it, he could possibly end up going is something like if he ends up becoming a pick and roll partner with somebody like Victor Wembanyama, that could be a lot of fun.
That's a great point. Yeah, I think that highlights how his skill set could translate well to the pros, because when you get higher level players around him, those tendencies that he has, just creating his own shot, but also, like you said, the pick and roll. He's a great cutter. He moves really well without the ball. I think he seems like he plays with a really high IQ. So yeah, 6'1 isn't ideal, but I think that's why KOC had him comp to someone like Lou Williams. Maybe he is just like a super spark plug off the bench. Maybe he's your first guy off the bench, comes in and gets buckets against second units, and run him a little bit with the first team as well.
Yeah, I think he could be a really awesome spark plug offensively off the bench for a team. I think that would be a great role for him, which is what he did in Kentucky as well. I kind of look forward to seeing what happens with him. I like those players that are just like super quick. He won't have to force the issue as much at the next level. I'm excited.
Totally. So we're on the same page in Dillingham. So this next player kind of highlights to me why this is a bit of a weaker class. Somebody who watched Reed Sheppard throughout his first, and you know, I'll say this is I know somebody who is friends with his girlfriend, so, which is ridiculous, but you know, my partner, she's from Kentucky, and so her friend's cousin is dating Reed Sheppard, a very long-term relationship, and the word through those channels is that Reed Sheppard might actually come back, that his parents are from the area. That's been his dream the whole time, is to play at Kentucky. His parents are fairly well to do, and I don't have the numbers on that, but like, let's just say he doesn't necessarily need to buy his mom a house. Like, he doesn't have any of those pressures on him. So don't be surprised if Reed Sheppard ends up coming back for a sophomore season, but we'll proceed as if he's in the 2024 draft. Just a little nugget for you. So Reed Sheppard, he's a guard, freshman, 6'3", 187 pounds. The Ringer has him as the 6th rated prospect. Hoop Intellect at 10. This one jumped out to me. The Ringer has shades of Derek White. He is a great on-ball defender. I don't know if he has the athleticism of a Derek White, but he really can get in there and block some shots. He has deep range. He can put the ball on the floor and attack a little bit. But again, having him as a potential top 5 pick, I would think ideally in an average to above average draft, you would be looking at Reed Sheppard in, you know, the range that a Grady Dick or a Tyler Hero went. You wouldn't necessarily want to be taking him with the top 5 pick, but I really do like the player. I just think that the ceiling probably is 4th best player on a playoff team. I don't see a ceiling for him that he could get a couple all-star nods, but then again, I'm just kind of speculating, but what's your take on Reed Sheppard's ceiling as an NBA player?
Yeah, I don't entirely know. I've also been a little bit surprised at how high he has been at times. There was a moment I remember at one point in the season, and I was going through and looking at big boards and things like that, and I saw a couple times him getting top 3 recognition, and just thinking, I don't know about that. He's a very nice player. And for what it's worth, I'm not like an NBA scout or talent evaluator. I'm just a basketball enjoyer. But he's obviously an incredible 3-point shooter. He's a great shot maker. I don't know how much shot creation for other people he'll be able to produce at the next level. And I think when you're looking at taking a player that high, that's an element that you want. And he's small, you know, he's 6'3", which, and he's not a point guard really. He's going to be a shooting guard in the NBA. And so that does come with, even if you're saying that you like some of his defensive intuition, like that comes with challenges at the NBA when you're guarding, he's going to be guarding people a lot bigger, a lot stronger than him. And so I think that there are limitations defensively that I would be a little bit worried about, and just size in general. I think, you know, him being a 6'3 shooting guard comes with bigger issues than Dillingham being a 6'1 point guard.
Agreed. Or a combo guard scorer off the bench. And he's more athletic, yeah. Dillingham. Yeah.
That's a good point. It'll be interesting to see. Obviously, he can really shoot the ball. And to your point earlier on about him possibly returning for a second season at Kentucky, which is not something that I had heard about, I wonder if there's any motivation there with having had such a good season and then just entirely underperforming in the tournament game.
That's my question, Caden. That's my question, and I apologize to Big Blue Nation, but it needs to be asked. The fact that his one collegiate playoff game or tournament game, it was hard to watch. I mean, he clearly he just wasn't prepared to play. It was crazy. I mean, he just looked like the moment was too big for him. He finally hit the 1-3. For, I would say, I don't know, early into the second half, I thought, okay, and ironically enough, him and Dillingham both came off the bench. This team was so loaded throughout the season, that needs to be noted. But I was like, yep, you got to get this guy out of the game. He just wasn't ready, and he got a deep team, and, you know, he came back in off a timeout and just jacked up an ill-advised three that didn't need to be put up, and that was kind of the end. And it's interesting because if Calipari thinks there's a chance he comes back, maybe that's a little more incentive to put a player back into a game and draw up a play for him. That if that was the play, that, do you remember that three I'm talking about that he just came back in? It's about 35 seconds left, just jacked it up. I couldn't believe to see that shot. But hey, I mean, if he thinks he's coming back, then maybe you just give him those reps.
Yeah, this is the first I've heard about him possibly coming back. That would be a really interesting story. I mean, he'd be coming in as, you know, preseason All-American.
Right, exactly.
Which is not something that's super common anymore.
Speaking, Kata, of coming in as a preseason All-American, we continue down the UK list here. So Justin Edwards was number three in the entire 2023 class for ESPN, for Rivals, and for 247 Sports. This is a 6'8" wing, 203 pounds. The Ringer has him 45th. Hoop Intellect has him 54th. I think that's much too low. And we talked a little bit about this off air, and there have been instances of players that, you know, they're just doesn't translate once they get to the college level. And it was an ambitious number that they came in with for their class. But we've also seen time and time again players just not get a sizable enough role or find their footing in their 1 year in college, but particularly at Kentucky. So how are you balancing that out when kind of grading out Justin Edwards as a prospect?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. It's because, you know, like you mentioned earlier and what we talked about, where sometimes you just enter a new offensive ecosystem and you struggle to find a niche. And if you're naturally a less assertive player, then maybe you do just struggle. He was not coming in expected to be like an excellent 3-point shooter or anything like that. And so when he's not involved offensively as much, he can kind of just become almost like a spectator. And there are moments where this isn't exactly the same thing, but you know, you get players like at Kentucky who are now all-star level players who were not taken super high. Yeah. Like you mentioned, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Devin Booker, Tyrese Maxey. And so I think it's an interesting thing. And a note on Justin Edwards, when I've watched him at times, what I've noticed is, and I mentioned this just a moment ago, is he just sometimes feels not involved in the offense. Yeah. He's watching. He's not asserting himself. You did mention that he is a decent cutter. I was thinking about highly ranked basketball players coming in to play their first and only season of college. There are two recent college basketball players that come to mind for me who had like the same problem, where they were really highly ranked. sometimes just did not get involved offensively at all. And you wondered, like, why is this person being so unassertive? And so this gives you, I think, a pretty good breadth of difference between these two guys. And Justin Edwards could maybe fall anywhere between them. One of them is Brandon Ingram. Both of these players I'm going to mention happen to be players at Duke. There were times when you'd watch Brandon Ingram at Duke and he was electric, and it was like you could totally understand the Kevin Durant comparisons, and it made a ton of sense. And then there would just be stretches in games where he would just stand in the corner and just not do anything. And I think Justin Edwards has a little bit of a tendency to do that. The other player, and this is another prime example of coming in a loaded draft class and maybe just not finding your niche, but he also hasn't quite found his role in the NBA either, is
Amani Bates.
Cam Reddish.
Cam Reddish is a great one. Bates is a good one too. I mean, yeah, there are countless examples. Bates, too. Everybody swears on Cam Reddish as far as players in his class, in his age bracket. They still think that Cam Reddish is that guy, which is interesting.
I know.
Yeah.
He's apparently like a really great locker room guy too. Like, people love him. For whatever reason, it hasn't panned out. So those are just two examples of guys who I saw having maybe a similar sort of issue with terms of how active or inactive they could be. One of them is obviously an all-star in the league, and the other one is still struggling to find a role. So my thought on Justin Edwards is he's probably going to fall somewhere. And if you are a young team willing to take a risk early in the second round and your name comes up and he's still there, I would probably take a swing on him.
That's my opinion too. And it's funny because that totally translates to how I feel about the fourth Kentucky player we'll talk about today. That player is DJ Wagner. This is a combo guard, 6'4", 192 pounds, freshman. The Ringer has him 56, hoop into like at 40th. So quite the discrepancy there. Fun fact on DJ Wagner, he will be, when he puts on that NBA jersey, the first third-generation NBA player. His pops was DeJon Wagner, I believe was drafted by Cleveland. He did not pan out. He had a lot of game. He lasted in the NBA from 2002 to 2007. And his gramps, Milt Wagner, good old Milt, played from 87 to 91. I'm sorry, Milt, I'm not familiar with your game. But his grandson's game, DJ Wagner, uber athletic player. I really think he's one of these guys that in the right situation could pop. Now, I would use an early second round pick on him if I was a team like the Bucks come to mind, a team that just needs some upside on the bench, that it's worth taking a shot on a player like DJ Wagner. So him and Justin Edwards kind of fit into that same mold. But overall, if I had to choose, and as far as whose game could translate to fantasy better, I like DJ Wagner. So it'll be interesting to see where those guys go. But yeah, DJ Wagner, did you get a feel for him? I know, it kind of flew by quickly.
First and foremost, I want to address something that needs addressed.
Yes.
Okay. That's NBA champion Milt Wagner.
I apologize.
1988 champion with the Los Angeles Lakers. He had a couple short stints in the NBA as well. So while he will be the third generation of his family to be playing in the NBA, hopefully he will have a longer career than either of the two that came before him. I'm mostly in agreement with you. I think that I was reading a statistic recently that in college basketball this season, and this was a couple weeks ago, so this could have changed a little bit, but DJ Wagner was in the 93rd percentile on catch and shoot threes.
Wow.
That's a valuable skill set that it's going to translate.
That's a great stat.
There's no reason that something like that shouldn't translate. And he's not going to be a primary or secondary defensive focus from other teams.
No.
So I think you get a decently sized combo guard who can shoot the three. And if that's all you can ever do, it's a valuable NBA asset. I think he's worth taking a second round pick, especially if, like you said, you need a little bit of offensive creation or shooting off the bench. That's the kind of role he's going to have in the NBA.
Well said. Eventually, I promise to you, the listener, we will stop talking about Kentucky players.
Sorry to derail a little bit there, but
no, that's good stuff. I don't know what to make of this Johnny Furphy kid from Kansas.
It's such a stupid name.
I know.
Listen, the two recent white boys from Kansas being named Grady Dick and Johnny Furphy is just This feels like a 30 Rock bit or something.
It's so good. Okay.
Yeah. Furphy's interesting, and I've seen him all over boards. Mm-hmm. Where does the Ringer have him?
They have him at 34. Hoop Intellect had him much higher. I want to say low 20s, number 20. And shades of, for the Ringer, shades of Cam Johnson or Dougie McDermott. A skilled shooter, a catch and shoot guy. He's got a bit of a wingspan to him. He's got the fancy boy haircut. Yeah.
I was actually going to liken him to Grady Dick. That's maybe the lazy thing to do here in real time, but I think similar profile. Kansas is an interesting team because they came in ranked first overall preseason and they had some injury issues, and they have a great white, Hunter Dickinson, whose career just ended a little bit prematurely in the tournament. Yeah, another name there for you.
Maybe a great white light.
That's interesting. And to your point about some of the discrepancies in player rankings on big boards, I think in a lot of ways, and this happens in lots of drafts, I think it's happening here, there's like a third tier of players in the draft that can kind of range, that, you know, includes maybe like 30 players that are kind of all within the same tier. And at that point, it becomes a little bit about an evaluator's preferences, yes. Things that they like or dislike a little bit more. And it's so close that even when guys are maybe 15 picks apart in different big boards, the actual discrepancy in how they're being viewed by those people might not be so large as that difference in number indicates.
Yeah, no, that's well said. It is a game of margins that we play in fantasy and when scouting actual players, I can imagine. Let's get in, Kate, into those Colorado boys, because interestingly enough, a team that begrudgingly joined the Pac-12, awkwardly enough, and they've really been recruiting some talent over there, in particular, Cody Williams. This is a player that just oozes what the NBA is looking for as far as a long, rangy, 6'8" wing. The Ringer has him 9th. Hoop Intellect has him 4th. The Ringer has shades of Jalen Rose, so a dynamic finisher and a big playmaker with an impressive defensive toolkit. Just by the way, shout out Kevin O'Connor. You are the GOAT at this, and I really appreciate you, so I want to make sure I'm sourcing your work properly. But Cody Williams, what do you think of him? Seeing him as a potential top 5 pick and kind of fits that profile of what NBA teams are looking for. Do you liken him to any recent prospects? Do you find his game to be special, exceptional, or is he more of an outline? Where do you lie on him?
Yeah, good question. So for the listeners who may not be aware, this is Cody Williams is the brother of Oklahoma City's Jalen Williams,
the Bronco.
So the success that, I'll just say this, the success, early career success that Jalen Williams has enjoyed is certainly not a detriment to Cody Williams' case.
Yeah.
I think people look at that as a sort of outline for what kind of player Cody Williams can be. That said, they are different profiles. Cody Williams is a couple inches taller. I believe Jalen Williams is 6'5", 6'6".
Yep.
Williams is taller. He's longer. He's thinner. But I do think that they are similar in that they both project to do a little bit of everything forwards. And that includes both sides of the ball, which is really intriguing. Jalen Williams took 3 years in college before he was starting to really get, NBA level looks, particularly, top of the first, top half of the first round kind of looks. And he ended up getting taken like 11th or 10th or something like that.
So interesting. Yeah. And yeah. Unique journey for a player who's a budding superstar now.
Yeah, very interesting. It just took a little while for his body to develop, to work on some things. And so there was some sort of expectation that would be the case for Cody Williams as well, especially because he is longer and thinner. And so this is the kind of player that one of the concerns is you would hope that they can fill their body out a little bit more.
Yeah, 180 is crazy for a player 6'8".
Yeah. And one of the concerns was they didn't know how good of an outside shooter he was ever going to be.
Okay.
In his first season at Colorado, he shot right around 40% from three. So that's really encouraging, albeit only on about 2 attempts a game. So he is a selective shooter from out there. But what he's really good at offensively is he plays very contained. He doesn't feel like he's forcing stuff up. He's really good at finishing through contact at the rim. And then he's a pretty solid free throw shooter as well. I think he can also be a pretty good connecting piece offensively. Where I think he's limited is at the moment, I don't see a lot of creation for other players. And I think there's a little bit of limited creation for self too. But he's shooting at an efficient level. He's a good finisher. And then defensively, he's a really like intuitive defensive player. I think he projects to probably, you know, be a good point of attack defensive player. Maybe not, you know, an all NBA defensive guy or anything necessarily, but potentially there. And I think just like a really, really solid defensive player who's going to get steals, who's going to get blocks, and who hopefully his limited 3-point shooting in college is indicative of what he's going to be able to do in the NBA.
Okay. Yeah, that was really well said. I'm kind of digesting all that. I'm wondering if he is going to be able to add some of the playmaking that's made his brother, Jalen Williams, such a valuable fantasy commodity, and that you're getting the scoring. He's actually in blocks and steals. He's incredible. His defense translates statistically. So I'm kind of wondering if Cody Williams is still working on that part of his game. And, you know, he's only 19 years old.
And that's what I was going to say is, again, Cody Williams had the additional two college years to work on this. Yep. Another thing that's worth mentioning is that Cody Williams has kind of been saddled with minor injuries throughout the season. And this stunted a little bit of Colorado's progress later on in the season. He was able to return for the tournament, but not at 100%. So if you watched him play in the tournament and you didn't see him popping off the screen, that might be a little bit of it. He's been dealing with a wrist and an ankle injury, and some kind of like facial injury as well. It's just kind of been like a little bit beat up in a lot of different places. Some of this is, you know, we're not entirely certain, but if you think, you know, he has a very similar disposition to Jalen Williams, they grew up together, obviously. And if you think that his progress should sort of map onto the way that Jalen Williams progress over his 3 years in college, that this is a pick people are talking about taking high and being a little bit patient about.
Okay, that's the patience is really useful for the fantasy listener. So, you know, if you play in a league that's dynasty or a keeper league, maybe move Cody Williams up a little bit. You know, we're going to get a lot more information, but maybe a first year player, he could be a wait and see guy, not somebody you're going to have to necessarily draft depending on landing spot, of course. Now, again, Cody Williams, 9th on the Ringer's big board, 4th on Hoop Intellect. Now, here's an interesting guy. We're going to get into Tristan Da Silva here, Caden. He is kind of a forward, a small forward, power forward, just a general wing, 6'9", 220. He's a senior. The Ringer has him 18th. Hoop Intellect has him 26. They have shades of slow-mo Kyle Anderson, which makes sense when you watch film of this guy. He kind of moves at his own pace. He's kind of robotic in some of his motions, getting into his shot. Solid all-around player, doesn't seem to be spectacular in any one area, which can make him a classic, not to keep using Jaime Jaquez as an example, but a ready-made role player for a contender is kind of how I see him. A player that I probably wouldn't draft before the late teens, depending on what I'm looking for. But what do you think about Tristan Da Silva?
Yeah, Tristan Da Silva is a really interesting player to watch at like the collegiate level, because like you said, he doesn't jump off the page with any one particular asset. He's not super athletic. He's not super fast, but he just does a lot of things well. And I think he figures to be a pretty good connecting piece offensively and defense.
He looks about 34 years old really well. He does that well.
Yeah.
He looks like he could have been in a production of Grease.
Yes. Yeah. He could play Kinnicky. So I think he'll be a connecting piece. He's a good shooter. He's a good solid outside shooter. I don't think he's going to, you know, create offense for anybody really, but the type of guy who's going to make the right play, can make the pass make the hockey assist, basically.
Great distinction between a traditional playmaker and somebody who just kind of moves the ball along and can function in an offense, which is who I think of when I think of Kyle Anderson.
Yes. And I think I was reading that and I thought that's a pretty, I can totally understand that comparison. I don't think it's perfect, and I can't blame Kevin O'Connor, because I was thinking for a long time and I can't really think of a perfect comparison, because I think Kyle Anderson is more of like a true point forward in ways. I don't see Tristan Da Silva being a point forward so much as an intuitive forward who has some of those skills and uses them to his and the team's advantage.
Okay.
So some things I think I see him doing well, being a good part of an offensive ecosystem that allows it to find success and to find the open guys. And I think he can be a pretty good piece in transition as well. So I think he's going to be a nice player, you know, a rotational forward for a team who wants to bring in an older, ready-to-play guy. I'm not sure from a fantasy standpoint how much statistical output that's going to result in.
100% agree. I was like, Tristan Da Silva is not really who you're looking to learn a whole lot about on a fantasy podcast. So shout out Tristan Da Silva. Good luck in the draft. A player who does interest me more than maybe he's being projected when I was researching last couple of days is the point guard KJ Simpson. 6 foot yep. 2, 189. He's a junior. Ringer has him 35th, 47th at Hoop Intellect. He just kind of has that alpha like leadership quality to him. I think you get these two comps a lot for a player like that: Fred VanVleet, George Hill. These are players who I think George Hill's more like 6'5". He's a little bigger than Fred VanVleet, but the same idea in that, you know, think about the Spurs this year from even a fantasy perspective. If they just had a functional point guard, now I love Jeremy Sochan, but that point forward experiment was goofy. And Tyus Jones is just kind of a guy. I think someone like KJ Simpson could come in and help either a veteran team or a young team and could produce usable fantasy lines in the right setting, maybe as a streamer. But what do you think about KJ Simpson? He's an older player. He just looks really rock solid. Is he one of these guys that you think is kind of a ready-made rotation piece or maybe a little more meat on the bones?
That's a good question. KJ Simpson's interesting, and from the perspective of somebody who watches a lot of college basketball and is not always great necessarily at accurately analyzing what an NBA role will be, he's like you said, very solid. He doesn't really make mistakes. I think hallmarks of a veteran point guard. Doesn't have any particular physical asset that stands out. He's not super fast. He doesn't have an incredible first step. He's not a great athlete, but he's just like a good solid point guard who's competitive.
Yeah. Give me a Derek Fisher sometimes. Where have all the Derek Fishers gone?
And he is small.
Stir the drink.
And so that's worth pointing out. I don't see any reason why he couldn't become like a rotational guard who's really solid in your second unit. It might not happen right away.
Yes.
I don't know.
Exactly. By the way, I said Tyus Jones earlier. I met his younger brother, Trey Jones. Tyus Jones is a little better player. But point stands. I think KJ Simpson's interesting. I said he was interesting. So that was our little team series. We did Kentucky. We did Colorado. So now we're going to get into a little segment that Kaden and I came up with, which is just players who are sitting there on these big boards, kind of just hanging out anywhere from, you know, the very early teens to the low 30s. And these are players that we think might have star potential, a.k.a. Cam Whitmore's, players that maybe at one time were much higher on draft boards and for whatever reason. And different reasons they're lower, or just guys that we're interested in that we think could pop. So let's get into some of those names. We're going to call these the 2024 Cam Whitmores. The first one is definitely has the most pedigree on this list, and that is your boy, Jacoby Walter. He is a freshman at Baylor, 6'5", 195. And again, he's pretty highly regarded. The Ringer has him 11th. Hoop Intellect has him 12th. So, you know, it's somebody that is probably going to be a lottery pick. This really intrigued me, and I watched some film on him. I really thought he was very silky in the way that he shot the ball, very fluid, played with real fluidity, had a nice pull-up game. Let me pull this up. The Ringer had shades of Chris Middleton, which, again, is kind of 6'5", 195, so the outline is very Chris Middleton-ish. What's your take on this guy? Do you think he has star potential?
Yeah, it's an interesting case because there were times early on in the season where I know he was being regarded as like possibly a top five pick, maybe the first college player taken off the board in the draft, which we know is top heavy with European players and G League Ignite players, but that's in no small part due to the fact, or due to how he started his season shooting. In the first half of the season, as a freshman, he came in and was shooting like 43% from three, and that wasn't all catch and shoot stuff. Like you said, he can create his own shot pretty well. He moves really smoothly. He looks like the type of guy who could, you know, you could put in at shooting guard today and would play well in the NBA. And then in the second half of the season, his numbers just dipped entirely to the point where he's now shooting like 36% or something. So it was a tale of two halves of the season. And so that's, he has been pushed back a little bit. And he was one of my guys who I thought would have a shot at really reinforcing, you know, higher end lottery status if he were to have like a really impressive NCAA tournament. Baylor didn't last super long in the tournament. That didn't happen. But in my view, the fluidity of his jump shot, his form looks really good. I have no reason to believe that his later season statistics are more indicative of what he's going to be in the NBA than what his earlier season statistics were. And if you at any point at 18, 19 years old are shooting 43% from three, to me, that means that there's something there. I think he can become a better shot or a better offensive initiator and creator for other players.
Okay.
But I think he's going to be a guy who can step in and knock down shots pretty much right away.
One of the things I've come across as far as areas of his game to improve is just his handle. His handle's a little loose. Maybe isn't one of the highlights of his game. And I think that's something he can work on. I mean, heck, you know, Jaylen Brown's one of the best scorers in the NBA and that guy can't dribble. So, you know, I don't know if I worry about that too much when scouting prospects from a fantasy lens or from a long-term lens, but still worth noting. So Jacoby Walter, Baylor, looking at like a late lottery pick. Okay, here's a guy that you pointed out to me, actually, to maybe highlight here. And that is good old Carlton Carrington. Yes, that's Carlton Carrington. He is a freshman at Pittsburgh. The Ringer has him 27th. Hoop Intellect did not have him in the top 60. So quite a discrepancy there. Let's just start there. Is this a player where having a discrepancy that wide makes sense? And if so, why is that? Well, give me a little bit on your boy Carrington here.
Yeah. So first off, I would say that he probably wins the award for most likely to share a name with an 18th century English Duke, Carlton Carrington.
Thank you for that. Well, we need a sponsor for that segment. We'll make sure.
If you want to shorten it, he also goes by Bub Carrington.
I did see that. Bub. Yeah.
Hey there, Bub. So he's an interesting case because he came in as a rookie at Pittsburgh, not receiving any NBA draft attention at all. He just wasn't on the radar at all. And his very first game as a freshman, he had an 18-point triple-double.
Okay.
And immediately, suddenly, he was skyrocketing up draft boards, up big boards, right? And it makes sense. He's had sort of a streaky season. He's a streaky shooter. He has moments, you know, he had a moment this year where he knocked down 7 threes in a game, but he also might go 0-for-7.
Okay.
He's got solid size for a guard. He's like 6'4", 6'5", probably. And the reason I put him here is because he is so intriguing to me. I'm excited to see what happens on draft night. We don't know for sure that he's going to declare and stay in the draft. I don't even know that for certain. It's probably going to depend a little bit on what his conversations with some teams have and what, you know, gauging interest level from different GMs. And so it'll be really interesting to see if he joins the combine, if he tests those waters and where he might get taken. Obviously, Kevin O'Connor has him as a first round draft pick. This is the type of guy who I see probably taking on, becoming a guy who can get buckets on any given night, but is a little bit streaky as well.
Gotcha.
Here, I might even go like Bones Highland or something.
It's funny because the comp he has is big Lou Williams, and we had a player earlier that was comp to Lou Williams and Bones Highland. It's a tempting comp. Lou Williams comes up a lot and Bones Highland as well. I still am in on Bones. I hope he can get it figured out. He's a skilled player. One concern from a fantasy perspective on Carrington is he posts an extremely low steals and blocks rate. which, you know, you're not always looking for from a guard. And also, Kevin O'Connor had written up that he doesn't really put much pressure on the rim. He's totally reliant on his jumper at this point. So, which looks beautiful from just a little bit I watched on him when you mentioned his name to me. But maybe he's not even in the draft this year. Yeah, go back, get yourself some reps.
Yeah, we'll see. I would suspect he declares, but we'll see. I think it's certainly possible that he's a very young player. He's exhibited an ability to do all sorts of stuff offensively. Obviously, you get a triple-double. That means you can do some things. He's a streaky shooter, and you would hope that maybe you can rein that in a little bit. I'm not surprised if a bad team takes him early in the second round or something like that, in which case I think he could have pretty solid statistical output, you know, you're backing up Jordan Poole in Washington or something.
I'm going to go on a record right now, if anyone would ever remember this, and say that the next player I wanted to mention will have a better NBA career, and he's a bit of an enigma. He was a surprise one and done, and that is Miami's freshman, Keyshawn George. Now, I watched about 5 minutes of tape last night, and then I read a little bit about him, but something about him really interested me. He's a 6'8", 205 pounds. It depends where you look. Ringer has him as a forward, Hoopintellect as a guard. I'm really intrigued by that size at 6'8". He's incredibly deep range. He profiles as a player who can get defensive stats. And that's interesting to me as a fantasy player. So maybe I'm a little biased there, but Keyshawn George, again, a bit of an enigma, but somebody that really interested me.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's always intriguing to have big shooters with range, but it can go both ways. I mean, we were talking about this the other day, a player who was taken, I think, a top 10 overall with a sort of similar profile is Kevin Knox, being like a 6'8" dude who can go around and get his own shot, and
that's fire.
It doesn't always pan out. So
he is
interesting for sure. I'll be interested to see what happens.
I'm not out on Kevin Knox. He will have his day. Another player I'm not out on, I'm just kidding, I'm out on him, is Brandon Boston. He's been buried on the Clippers bench. I still think he's going to eventually score 15 points for an entire season, not just only 15 points once. He'll average 15 points. speaking of shooters, a player that you really wanted to talk about that is interesting, perhaps the oldest player in the draft, that is a senior, that is Terrence Shannon Jr., I believe, from Illinois, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so the Ringer has... Ringer has him 32nd. Hoopintellect did not have him in their top 60 or honorable mention. That video came out a month ago. I want to say it's the latest. It's the 3.0 of his big board over there at Hoopintellect. But at that time, Terrence Shannon Jr. was still not on it. So I guess I'll start again, like Carrington. Is there a reason for such a discrepancy, or is it just kind of marginal at this point? Or do you see this guy as, you know, do you see this guy as somebody who is floating beneath the radar and that we should really be interested in?
Yeah, so part of that probably is age. I think he's going to be 24 on draft night. Like, that's not great. He played 3 seasons at Texas Tech, 2 seasons at Illinois. And I think something worth maybe pointing out here is that a big board and a mock draft function differently.
They do.
And so I don't know what if Hoopintellect, if you asked him if he would guess that Terrence Shannon gets drafted, but I just don't have him on my big board because this is more about what I see as players' potential down the road. Maybe there's something there just in terms of methodology with the two different approaches.
Okay.
I like Terrence Shannon as a win now, late 20s pick by some team who needs a guy who can come off the bench, play a little bit of defense, and get some off the bench downhill scoring. He's 24 years old. He's a competitor. He's strong. He's in his, you know, he's in his adult body. He's ready to play today, and he can go up. He's a downhill offensive creator who is really good at finishing at the rim. I think, not to overuse the example, but similarly, Jaime Jaquez was an older player who's ready to come in and contribute and be gritty immediately. And I see Terrence Shannon as being somebody similar. I don't know that he'll have the immediate rookie success and impact that Jaime Jaquez has had, but I kind of see him within a similar mold.
Maybe it's just the name thing, but when you were talking, I was thinking about Shannon Brown as a downhill scorer off the bench. Remember Shannon Brown played for the Lakers, fans really loved him, but he's somebody that really popped.
He was one of the more impressive athletes in the world. Exactly. I'm not sure Terrence Shannon is that, but He's a lefty too, which is kind of fun. I think he's a guy that can come in and be part of a rotation immediately. And if you need some rotational scoring, he might just end up being that guy.
By the way, quick shout out to just want to give a plug. So Hoop Intellect, the follow over on Twitter is Keandre, as the main guy over there. So it's at Hoop Intellect. So make sure you're following him on Twitter. He's doing a lot of great work. So big shout out to you for all the work you're doing over there. So that does it. So Jacoby Walter, Carlton Carrington, Terrence Shannon Jr., and Keyshawn George. Those are the players that we identified as kind of in a bit of a Cam Mitmore mold as players that could be sleepers in the draft and maybe pop once they get an opportunity. Caden, are you ready for this?
I'm ready for this.
Let's go ahead and make a declaration now. We're going to declare this season's Great White. Now, this is something that Caden and I, just talking ball over the years, we came up with this concept. It's usually a four-year American-born white player, and the outline is usually somebody who had a historic college career, and then, you know, maybe they made the NBA, maybe they were a role player, maybe they weren't. You know, I think in the 90s, great whites like Eric Montross, for instance, North Carolina, he was the fifth overall pick. He was a waste of a center. There was a lot more examples of really high great whites being drafted. Tyler Hansborough, you know, if you move up a little bit, you know, move up a little bit, he had a functional NBA career, but he was a college superstar. Then you get the sharpshooters in there. You get your JJ Redicks. You get your, I don't know if Grayson Allen counts. But yeah, these are the sort of players we're talking about. Anyone you want to give a shout out to, and then please do announce your official great white for 2024.
Yeah. Okay. So, as an example, last year when I was on the pod, we awarded Gonzaga's Drew Timme with the award.
Timme.
I think you could also give Adam Morrison that award in 2006.
Number three overall pick. You see, we've learned from great whites of the past.
Yes. Another one that comes to mind, just if I'm listing these off, Kyle Singler.
Oh, yeah, who, yeah, yeah.
Had an excellent career at Duke, won a national title, and kind of floated around the NBA a little bit, probably most notably for the Lakers. They always seem to have somebody like this on their roster. So I'm tempted. I'm going to give an honorable mention to someone who's already been mentioned on the pod today, Hunter Dickinson of the Kansas Jayhawks, formerly of the Michigan Wolverines, had a very good individual career, which was sadly finished early in the tournament this year. Although I'm going to give the actual award to another player whose career may have ended a little bit early in the tournament this year, who is likely to be a late first, second, early second round draft pick, Marquette Golden Eagles, Tyler Kolick.
Tyler Kolick, congratulations. I assume this is the highlight of your career and something you've strived for some time. So, you know, I hope you enjoy it and savor the moment. So Tyler Kolick, he is this year's great white. Like Caden said, he's a senior, just finished up at Marquette, 6'3", 195 pounds. The Ringer has him 31st on the big board, Hoop Intellect 37th. So what are we getting into with Tyler Kolick? From an NBA perspective, what do we hope from him?
I think Tyler Kolick, your hope is an efficient and an efficient point guard who's able to get his teammates involved and who also can get his own jump shot. I think he projects reasonably well to be a rotational player. Again, it might not be in year one. It might take a little bit of time, but I think he's going to be able to be a guy who can distribute the ball really well. I've seen some talk about the possibility. Maybe it's just matching up any competent point guard with Victor Wembanyama is
there's a lot of talk of that.
It's a dream, but him being you know, a mature, well-rounded player who can get Victor and the other guys the ball reasonably well. Nobody else seems to be able to totally do that in San Antonio. That if they, I'm not sure if San Antonio has an early second round pick, but if they do, then that's the kind of kind of player that if he ends up in a situation like that, he might have some real like draft or lottery or excuse me, fantasy potential.
Gotcha. So I guess the ceiling for a player like that would be Seattle Supersonic legend and Blaine Washington resident Luke Ritenour without the flash.
Yes. Yeah. That's actually a pretty good comp. And shout out Luke Ritenour for retiring after getting traded, what, six times in one day?
That's a great. I forgot about that. Yeah. My favorite Luke Ritenour moment is perhaps his career highlight. Last time the Seattle Supersonics were in the NBA playoffs was 2005. And I was about 20 years old. I was lucky enough to go to those games, went to the first round games against the Kings and then the Spurs in the second round. And Luke Ritenour, in one motion, got a ball off a deflection, flung it behind his back from half court right into the like running hands of Rashard Lewis for a dunk. And it happened so quick, it looked like an alley-oop, but it was one of the best behind-the-back flip passes you could ever ask for. So if you've never seen that pass from Luke Ritenour, please go ahead and pull that up on YouTube right now. Shout out Luke Ritenour. I actually had your oversized jersey for many a years and eventually lost it. So,
Oregon Ducks legend as well. We should give the shout out there.
He got him to the Elite Eight, man.
Yeah, he helped really legitimate the Oregon Ducks program.
If you want to call it legitimate, yeah.
I almost wore my Beavers shirt, actually, but I didn't. I have a Beavers basketball shirt.
Hey, anywhere that calls Gary Payton their best all-time player is cool with me. And Bones Berry, Brent Berry, another Sonic great. we've reached the shout-out portion of the podcast.
Projecting the jump. Projecting the jump. Projecting the jump. Projecting the jump. It's Nathan, Licky, and Jay. They're projecting the jump today. Will they guess right? Nobody knows. It's a podcast. It's about basketball. It's about coffee sponsors.